Exit Point on Kaya Biz is brought to you by Momentum. Momentum, here for your journey to success.
It's 5 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959, and we are officially into the second hour of the show. It's a Thursday at 7. That does mean that we have Pivot Point. And if you know anything about me by now, this is one of my most favorite features because it gives us an opportunity to sit down, interact, connect, listen and learn with leaders from various institutions to fully understand what the pivotal experiences have been within their sectors. And of course, pivotal moments have been within their journeys as well. And most importantly, the impact that they're looking to leave on society and the environment that we're in. Tonight, we speak to someone who works for an organization that is called Kruthman. Now, if I said IntelliDex, you would probably be familiar with that particular name and title, but essentially, Kruthman is an IntelliDex company, one that is really metamorphosized by providing a lot of insight, knowledge, and of course, effectiveness within different economies and for various institutions, essentially helping us understand how things work. And this is what gets me excited. They go through the numbers, help them make sense by sharing a story and practical insight into various industries, various economies, and factors that we need to be mindful of. Joining us to tell us more about this is someone who's had a phenomenal journey throughout the private sector, public sector, consultancies, and of course is now an author of a book titled How to Fix a Country. That is Dr. Roy Haveman, who's joining us in studio. He's the CEO of Kruthman, previously known as IntelliDex. Such a pleasure to have you with us, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I'm excited just to have you here. And the truth is, we can really take this anywhere and everywhere, right? Given your background, given the company you work for and lead, and of course your book. I'll come to the title of your book in just a moment to make sure that I don't slip my tongue. But let's talk about your journey. For many of us, I remember interacting with IntelliDex as a very young journalist and now Kruthman, and having read a lot of your reports and having to, I guess, interview, report on them and share the insight with the public. And I think we don't appreciate enough the kind of work that you do. But for someone who isn't aware of what you do at Kruthman, give us an overview and quick insight.
Great. Yeah, we see ourselves as a research-led consultancy. So the idea really is that we believe that what we need to do and what our purpose is to make sure that we have accurate and reliable research that people can rely on. I think many things that happen in the world, and I mean, I'm an economist, and you know that there are different schools of economic thought.
Yes.
There are some people that think this is how the world should work, and there's other people that think this is how the world would work. And often that is just purely their ideology or how they think about the world. They don't base that in facts or in research or in understanding. And so what we are trying to do, I guess, as a firm is make sure that everything that we do is research-led and brings, I think, value to society by bringing understanding and knowledge about how the world works.
And speaking of that, I was sharing with you off air that I've had the opportunity to work and partner and maybe even communicate some of this messaging. If one takes a look at the Sanlam Transformation Gauge, there's also work you've done with the private equity space, looking at various reports there. And maybe give us a further breakdown, because to the rest of us, it might just seem intriguing that we see the numbers, the figures and the story behind it. But it's a lot of work to run a research consultancy.
Yes, we have 30 people, so we've grown quite significantly. We also have a network of other people outside the organization that we draw on, experts in particular areas, and some of them have very long careers and are often retired and have really amazing experience and expertise. And the idea is to pull together all these skills and to make it make sure we produce the best possible research product that we can.
What's been intriguing is that what was started off as a local entity has really grown leaps and bounds to be a global competitor. How has this taken place? And maybe I ask because I see the likes of Peter Todd Montalto as a key partner to the business as well.
Yes, well, Peter has his own very interesting background. He used to be in investment banking, and then I think he saw the light. And he felt...
I love that.
And, you know, he's actually, you know, he's British. And the joke is that he spends more time in Johannesburg than most Joburgers. He's obsessed with South African wine. That's actually his number one passion. This economics thing is a sideline. But he's you know, maybe we've converted him or
I love that.
Turned it, but it's fascinating.
I used to interview him as a young journalist back at CNBC Africa, and would always be about the politics, the rand, and what the international market perception is about South Africa. So it's so refreshing to actually see the camaraderie and the partnership with institutions and with individuals like yourself who are proudly South African, know the nuances here, and are able to actually partner to extrapolate what it actually means for all of us and the globe in this detail.
Yes, and I think that's a very interesting perspective, because he does bring the perspective of how do people from outside South Africa see us, but marries that with the idea of that we are a South African firm, and so we're very much rooted here. And I mean, the offices are about a kilometer away from the studio, and so that brings that, I think, unique international perspective that many South African firms maybe don't have, or on the other hand, that many international firms don't have a presence here. So I guess we get to balance that quite well.
I'm keen to understand, as a consultancy, is the work that you do fully comprehended not only by your clients but the stakeholder groups that matter? And I ask this because a lot of the information that you share, interrogate, investigate and report on really helps us understand the scope of the policies that are in place and if they are working or not. And when we read this from the feedback, we obviously then understand, okay, maybe we need to change this, tweak that. Is that positively received by key stakeholders who need to actually implement some of the suggestions you share?
Yes. I mean, we try very hard to keep our independence and to be independently minded. Even when a client is paying for something, we've had fights with clients where they are paying for something and they're like, oh, we don't like the results. We're like, well, we're independently minded. Sorry about that. I think it's important that you create a sort of a structure where people understand and trust what you're doing, so that you have integrity about the independence of your research. Because, you know, in this era of fake news, it's easy to like get caught in a YouTube bubble and you don't necessarily know what the facts are or what the truth is. And very much you want a vision of things that when it says, you know, in the old days it was Intellidex says the following, then you know that somebody has actually sat down and researched the topic and thought about it in a lot of detail. And I think that's also what we're trying to achieve with a new brand.
Looking forward to seeing how this does growth and transition. And if you've just joined us, we are in conversation with the CEO of Kruthman, previously known as Intellidex, or rather an Intellidex company, which essentially focuses on economic research and is a consultancy in that space. We are in conversation with Dr. Roy Heveman, who is the CEO of the institution. Roy, we find ourselves in an interesting predicament in South Africans, and media representatives like myself typically tell our audiences that half the world's population, much like South Africa, is headed to the polls this year. And for South Africa, I find that it's particularly nuanced to some of the challenges that we have in the country. You witnessed this not only through your work that you've done, the institutions you've worked for, but now through a book that you've published. And it's beautifully titled, How to Fix an A Country. You can read it, you can Google it and find it at good bookstores. But it really does give us 6 things to reboot South Africa. And before we even get into the detail of the book, I think it's also important that we contextualize the economic challenges that we have in South Africa. You've worked at National Treasury before, you've worked at private institutions, worked in consultancy. Is it fair to say that South Africa does have some of the best economic policies in the world, despite our failure to implement?
I think so. In actual fact, that's what the book sort of talks about, is that, you know, I have no spectacularly new, fresh ideas in the book. What I basically do is summarize big ideas. I kind of call it the, you know, your in the old days when we had CDs and we used to burn our favorite songs.
Yes.
The playlist, maybe it's the economic policy playlist.
Got you.
Of top 6 songs.
But this one is legal.
Exactly. Exactly. These are the top 6 things drawing from, you know, all the research that has been done by the Treasury, by the Presidency, by various government departments and universities, and I rely quite a lot of on that, to say these are sort of the top 6 things that we need to do right now and that we can do within the next year or 2 or 3. And it's been really heartening to see how people identify with those 6 things. And, you know, I think there really is a strong sense in South Africa that we know what we need to do. We don't need to debate that amongst each other. We have a good sense of what we want to achieve as a country. And we all think it. It's not a Fortunately, I think we are slowly moving away from the idea that we have these big different views on what needs to be done. Yeah. I think people would all agree on what needs to be done.
Dr. Haveman, on that note, though, the typical argument is political war. Is that still a challenge in South Africa? And I ask this deliberately, knowing that next week we'll be at the election polls. And are we finding that there is just this struggle, this fear of implementing what is amazing policies that could actually make a difference?
Yes, I think that's a really good word, a really good way of phrasing it, that there's almost a fear of implementing things.
Mm.
There's a lot of nervousness about the impact of changes. We are quite a conservative country, and I think that sometimes politicians think, oh, well, this will be this will have lots of disadvantages, or there might be backlash or something. And so they become quite nervous about taking very brave steps.
Mm.
I often say that economics is a terrible discipline because it teaches you about trade-offs. Mm. And there are always trade-offs in every different policy decision. You need to understand what those trade-offs are, and you need to be brave and say, well, these are the consequences of us going down this route, and these are the consequences of us going down that route.
I find that so intriguing, and I'm hoping that you can share a lot more, especially when it comes to the thoughts on the diverse approaches that we should be implementing to economics, and I guess just economics as a discipline, because many of us just think, well, you know, you're reporting on models, you're looking at outcomes, but the truth is there's a particular nuance and story to economics that we need to have a deeper appreciation for.
Yes, I was actually just talking to someone earlier about how in many ways economics is common sense. And you know, there's that old saying about common sense is that
it's
not that common. Exactly. And in some ways, I mean, I have this I always joke about my blinding number one insight, which is that if we had a stable supply of electricity 24 hours a day, we would probably be a lot better off as a country.
Just
electricity.
Never mind the logistics, never mind upskilling our youth, never mind finding employment. Just electricity.
Yes. Now imagine you are you're trying to start a small business, you're in a township, maybe it's hairdressing salon, I don't know, anything, a shop or anything.
Mm.
And you don't have electricity for a few hours a day.
Oh.
Or you're a restaurant and then you need a generator, or we live here. I don't have to give you examples. These are the sort of, it's not a complicated science. I think sometimes the ideas are right there, and we know what to do about electricity.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I do see that it is one of the six segments that you touch on that do need to be addressed. I'm also incredibly keen to focus on another theme, which is education. And I think this is important because it takes us back to the four factors of production, labor, capital, entrepreneurship, and of course, land. And labor becomes a very intriguing one for South Africa because of the, can we say, dichotomy of skills that we have in South Africa and the dearth that currently exists there. How critical would the focus on skills and human capital need to be in an emerging market like South Africa to really unlock potential?
Absolutely central. I talk a little bit about, we know these things. We talk about the differences that people have in the sort of opportunities that they get from a very young age. I went to a government school, but I happen to have gone to a really good government school, in my opinion. But then, other people just don't have those opportunities and they go to really bad government schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then, why are we surprised that 20 or 30 or 40 years later, you have this very divergent outcome of how people, their lives or the trajectory of their lives. And we need to fix that sort of right at the source. So we sort of need to fix that inequality at the opportunity level. So at the source.
Definitely. But what are the pivotal challenges we need to get over to make sure that 2030 does change? I know you've got the six that are listed here, but I guess more from a private sector point of view and public sector level of camaraderie, especially given that you've worked for both sectors before.
So I've said this a few times in the last few weeks, and I guess I'm beginning to believe it even stronger than ever, which is that I worry that we've become a little bit too patient as a country.
Yes. What a beautiful way to put it.
The lights go out And we have a gas stove at home, so that's fine. We put on the gas stove. We have a very old house, so we have a fireplace. We put on the fire and drink some red wine, and, you know, that's load shedding. It's actually has become almost a strangely pleasant experience. We shouldn't be like that. I think we need to demonstrate impatience with our politicians and ask them, why is it that when we get home at night, there is no electricity? And they have a plan. How is that plan going? You know, there is an energy action plan. It's a very good plan. There are lots of committees. There's a National Energy Crisis Committee, et cetera, et cetera. So the plans are there. We just need to put a little bit of pressure on the politicians just to get their own plans over the line.
How do we do that without burning ties?
Oh, yes. Well, I think a lot of people do express their frustration by burning tires. And, you know, that is also creates its own set of problems because then I think, you know, it also wrecks the infrastructure. But you can understand the frustration, I think. We do that by, you know, thinking very carefully about how we vote. I think we do that by when, after we voted, by holding the people that we voted for to account for what they must do. We do that by getting involved. Civil society is an amazing thing in this country, you know. You just see what has happened during the years of state capture, how civil society really banded together to effect change. And, yeah, we do that by being active citizens.
Definitely, very important. I must say, one of the job opportunities that you participated in for over 11 years was at National Treasury, working as Chief Director for Financial Markets and Stability, if I'm not mistaken. And just that title already intrigues me, never mind the kind of policies you had to put together. But I think it also highlights something that when I interact with a lot of stakeholders like yourself, we actually realize that South Africa has amazing institutions that have heightened levels of strength and integrity, especially when it comes to the management of our financial markets. And I'm hoping that you can break that down for us as average South Africans who just put our money into our bank accounts, maybe invest in a unit trust in an ETF, and don't fully comprehend the activity that takes place around financial markets.
Yes, I think we're very fortunate as a country to have, I mean, I've worked at the Treasury for a very long time. I sort of know the institution very well, and I'm a great, it is my family in many ways. I think it's a very strong institution. We have a very strong central bank, which is kind of rare, actually, for in comparison to other emerging markets. And that places us in very strong stead. I was actually just at a conference this morning, Monocle Beyond Banking conference, and we were talking about all the innovations that the Reserve Bank has brought out, PayShap, the ability to make payments cheaper. Just the fact, you know, if you've been to the United States, you kind of feel that you've fallen off the edge of the planet because they still use checks. And when you use your credit card, they still have a... It's very strange, but our payment system is, you know, you can pay, you know, when you get on the train, you just double-click your phone and you can pay. We have very advanced payment systems, very advanced, we have very advanced financial system. And I think that's a credit to the regulators and to the central bank.
Definitely. Before I let you go, I want to pick your brain on two questions. The first one relates to comparisons that we often face with international peers. And people typically say South Africa should be like Singapore, push forward like Rwanda, maybe even the likes of Saudi Arabia. Those are tried and tested models that have worked for those particular markets. But again, coming back to that overriding theme, what do you believe South Africa's narrative will be before we find ourselves at those levels of significant growth like the likes of Singapore? And I guess can be pointed to as an example for other emerging markets to want to emulate.
Yeah, so in the book I go through a number of different countries that have had similar journeys to us. You know, these, you know, we often think that we're very unique, but we're not that unique. You know, Colombia has got had an incredible drug and crime problem, much worse than ours. You know, Vietnam was wiped out by a nuclear bomb. Not a nuclear bomb, sorry. Vietnam was wiped out by a war. Japan was wiped out by, Hiroshima was wiped out by a nuclear bomb.
Yes.
You know, countries have really experienced lots of difficulties, and they've thought very hard about how they pick themselves up and get themselves going again. And I think we can do that in this country. I think that we are in a, you know, this is still a fantastic country. So it's really about just picking up those lessons from other countries. And only today, the latest report from Operation Vulindlela came out. And I think we can be very proud of the work that that team has done on very straightforward, simple ideas. So one of the things that they have done, for example, is change the regulations on the amount of electricity that an individual or a company can procure itself.
Oh, that's good.
Previously, we weren't allowed to put up solar panels, for example.
Yes.
Large-scale solar panels, because it wasn't allowed in the law, and that was changed. Now we know if you look down on Rosebank Mall, actually, which is right here, you see there's just actually one big black solar panel, it feels like it. And the mall then is... you know, kind of off the grid or can be load shedding free. These are all as a result of changes that were made. So we know what to do. And I think there is progress. It is very slow, but I think the progress is in the right direction.
I love the example that you share there about the solar panels, because as South Africans, it's something we can relate to. We see it in shopping malls, office parks, sometimes even residential estates and complexes. And it takes me to my final question. You're someone who lives, breathes economics, who knows how to tell the story around economics and even solution for some of the challenges that we find within our economies. For me, as the average South African who's listening in my car right now, overwhelmed by CPI, GDP, quarterly labor force index, all these terminologies and themes that are thrown at me, what's the one thing I need to understand about economics, its impact on me and my country?
I think the one thing that you need to understand is that there is no such thing as a free lunch. Nothing comes for free in life. There are always trade-offs, and I, particularly as we go into the elections, don't be fooled by people that say that things are super easy. You have to follow a very tried and tested approach to things. There's no such thing as allowing the central bank to print money. That's not going to solve our problems. We know from history that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I think as you go towards the elections, just read these manifestos very carefully and ask yourself, does this pass the smell test? Does this manifesto, is it promising something that can't be promised, or is it promising something that has worked elsewhere?
Definitely. Such a pleasure speaking to you, sir. I could, like, I just want to keep going. But unfortunately, we have ads to play and other conversations to get to. But such a pleasure speaking to you, Dr. Haveman. I'm assuming the book we can find in all good bookstores?
All bookstores. It was launched last week and it's available now.
Fantastic. How to Fix a Country. Wow. Think of a stronger word for fix. That's what it is. Thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed this and really appreciate the fact that you've made economics tangible and relatable to all of us as South Africans. Thank you again for the work that you and your team do.
Thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Fantastic. That is Dr. Roy Haveman, who's joined us this evening. He is the CEO of Crithman, which is an Intellidex company. Next time you read these economic reports that we often talk about and discuss on the show, essentially really getting into the detail of numbers that then tell us more about industries, sectors, and the performance of our economy. That is what makes a difference in making sure that we fully comprehend how the world works, how it impacts our communities and societies, our countries, and our well-being. As you've heard Dr. Haveman saying, nothing comes without a trade-off. Important to remember. Even a job in every home or free education. All these themes we're hearing from political parties, nothing comes without a trade-off.